This is Now Innovating, a research to impact podcast from the Office of the Vice President Research at the University of Calgary with Dr. Preetma Chadha and Jordan Witzel.
Hello once again, and thank you for joining us for downloading this episode of Now Innovating, a Research to Impact podcast. Right out of the gates, I would like to take this opportunity to acknowledge that Now Innovating is produced in partnership with CJSW on the traditional territories of the people of the Treaty 7 region in southern Alberta, which includes the Blackfoot Confederacy, comprising of the Siksika, Piikani, and Kainai First Nations, as well as the Tsuut'ina First Nation and the Stoney Nakoda, including the Chiniki, Bearspaw, and Wesley First Nations. The city of Calgary is also home to Métis Nation of Alberta, Region 3. We're jumping right in because we have so much to cover today. Nothing new. It is a revisitation of sorts. Let me explain. We launched the podcast in the fall of 2021 with the hopes of engaging incredible change makers in our community. We've done that. The idea this week is that we return to some of the best advice we've heard from our guests to date. Call it a greatest hits episode, but this is advice worth revisiting. We spoke with Dr. Ryan Todd in episode 13. Dr. Todd is a psychiatrist and CEO of Headversity. He shared his thoughts on the process of founding a business, advising those of us in this space to recognize gaps in our thinking in such a way that allows us to build an effective team around us. Did you right away partner with anyone as far as co-founding? What was the initial hurdle that you had to climb over? What did that all look like?
We had four founders, myself, Jordan, Steve, and Cam. Cam was our CFO. Steve was on chief marketing officer. And then Jordan was our COO. So those four individuals were crucial, foundational, their founders. This wouldn't have happened without them. Like this, without those three and us really putting this together, I mean, it's just me still in my office, frustrated and lamenting what could have been. So the challenges are endless. And I think the thing about medicine, which is really bizarre that I realize, is you're told in some ways that you are, you know, through medical school and residency, that you should be, and sometimes are, the smartest person in the room. Like that is kind of ingrained in you for a couple of different reasons. There's some cultural kind of arrogance there with the field. There's a bit of like Western medicine authority built into that, right? Like you have to be the authority or decisions don't get made for a patient who needs help. You're kind of a decision maker. But what that doesn't tell you is about the genius, the brilliance that goes on in the outside world, outside of medicine, of course. So once you get released from the medical world into this really bizarre and enormously complex world of entrepreneurship, my eyes were open to a couple things. One, the system, let's call this whole thing a system, is set up to crush little entrepreneurs. Like it is not friendly. The inertia to getting something started is, and statistics have proven it to be nearly impossible to do that. Two, there's so much genius in the world to help you get over those impossibilities. And we've been really fortunate to bring an advisory team together, an amazing group of investors together who started to believe in us based on a PowerPoint deck, and bring together a focused mission. And then now we have an employee base that just every day blows me away at their creativity, their commitment, their sacrifice to try and help others.
You're lucky to have three co-founders, and we interview a lot of researchers that are on their own, and they're going out and they're trying to take their research to market and build a business around it. What's your advice to them in terms of should they look for a co-founder?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I think are really important there, Preetma. One is that you have to identify your weaknesses, and you have to be brutally honest with those weaknesses. I have no business understanding finance or complex financial models. I'm not particularly adept to understanding pay-per-click marketing, as a very tactical example. You have to understand, I think, your personal weaknesses. I'm highly conflict adverse, as an example. And there tends to be times when you need to deal with conflict when you're in a business and work through that and have some, you know, a grounding for that and work with people on that. And so you need people to fill in those voids that you have. So doing a lot of work on yourself and understanding your deficiencies, hugely important. The second piece of that is more tactical, is to understand the brass tacks around a partnership early. You know, understand this is my cut, this is your cut, this is what I'm paid, this is your paid. The reason you do that early is because when things get real, 6 months, a year, 2 years down the road, that is not when you want to have those conversations. And they're not always easy. You know, you're putting table stakes down to represent your worth to another partner. And those are conversations that need to be constructive and delicate at times, but they need to be had.
Adam Pidlisecki joined us in episode 17. Adam is an associate professor in the Department of Geoscience at UCalgary, and he is leading the Academic Entrepreneur in Residence pilot program. How do you become more coachable? How do you recognize that at times you become defensive against being coachable? What would your advice be to someone who is stepping into that space looking for mentorship?
Yeah, so I think it first of all, like any coachability in a professional sphere requires you to self-reflect and identify not just where are your blind spots, but what are your weaknesses? Where do you need help in terms of, you know, when you think about yourself as a complete person who can try to think about things from a variety of perspectives, identifying like, hey, do I have blind spots? Where am I biased? If you can't sit back and identify where your weaknesses are, I'm not sure you're a coachable person, because it does require a commitment on both sides of that equation. So you've got to be willing and able to self-reflect. And that's kind of like a sort of meta idea. And then in the moment, when you're coaching on ideas, and one of the things particularly around entrepreneurial coaching is, if you're going to fail fast, right? One of the things in the Canadian system too is Canadians, we're kind of polite, right? We talk about it, but it's really true. You know, I've done business globally, you know, working for multinational, and we don't necessarily say what's on our mind all the time. And when you're in a coaching environment, you're trying to get somebody to fail fast, you kind of have to push hard, right? You have to push back and have some uncomfortable conversations. And so the person needs to be ready for that. One of the first things they need to do, I think, is start to personally think about separating your ideas from yourself. And that's really hard a lot of times in academia, because they are really melded together. And when those are one and the same and somebody's criticizing it, they're criticizing you. So as a coach, that's a really challenging place to navigate. But as somebody who's being mentored or coached, you have to remember that your ideas aren't you. You're going to have lots of ideas, and start to separate yourself from that. Because if you can go into a coaching environment where you can have those hard conversations, they're going to be really productive. Going into a coaching environment where everybody says cheerleader, cheerleader, rah, rah, rah on an idea that's not good doesn't actually help you in the long term. It maybe alleviates some short-term discomfort, but it doesn't help you succeed long term.
Karen Benzies joined us in episode 5, shortly after accepting her appointment as Director of Social Innovation at UCalgary. Her team has been hard at work since, building a social innovation initiative on campus. Karen has some great advice for us regarding listening to those around us who may complement our expertise.
One of the things that I've learned to do in my career, I was trained old school. You know, I was, you know, PhD, you were the expert, 2 postdocs. Wow, you were the expert. And I had to get over that. And I learned to listen. And every great social innovation that I've worked on with teams meant that sometimes my great academic ideas actually were wrong. Mm-hmm. And that I had to have the confidence to pivot and listen and pivot and go another direction. So I don't know if we've got time for an example.
Absolutely, we do.
So a few years back, the government asked us if we would be able to trial the Finnish baby boxes for families of new babies. They were maternity packages, gifts for families.
Okay.
And when we were engaged, they said, oh, well, we want mentorship. And this was the former minister at the time, who since passed away, the most amazing man. He said, we want mentorship. And our government contact said, oh, no problem. We have all kinds of volunteers working in parent link centers. And then I started going out to the community and talking to the executive directors. And they're going, well, we don't know where they are, but if they were around, we'd sure like to have them because we could use volunteers. So they didn't exist. So my smart idea of using mentors who were already existing in these agencies was basically incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
So I pivoted and I built a mentorship program where we provided training for grandmas and sisters and neighbors and friends to support moms of new babies. And it worked like a darn. You know, we had less depression, babies' development was better. But that was just a real, you know, clear example of how wrong academics can be,
mm-hmm.
and what can happen if you actually listen to community.
We were joined by Alice Reimer in episode 14. Alice is the site lead at Creative Destruction Lab Rockies, located at the Haskane School of Business at UCalgary. As a successful entrepreneur and experienced mentor, Alice shared some insight into assessing your idea or product for market fit, and also discussed some mentoring programs in place at CDL.
What's your advice to researchers when they receive what they deem as authoritative advice from an entrepreneur that says, maybe this needs to be worked out a little bit more? What's your advice to them? Because so often I see people not heeding that advice and going with, you know, their heart instead of their head.
Oh my gosh, that's a $1 million question. A couple of things that I would say. First and foremost, and I would say this across all, as you know, there's 10 CDL sites across the world. There's 5 here in Canada. I would say reach out first and foremost. One of the things that we've identified is to your point, Preetna, sometimes the technology may not be applied to the right market, but by actually spending time looking at the technology and perhaps thinking about other markets, there may be something there that oftentimes researchers haven't necessarily thought through that whole value chain or that whole market opportunity. And one of the things that we've introduced at CDL Rockies is a nurture program. So we think it's actually really important to connect with those researchers early. And we do that, you know, through CDL Rockies. But then, of course, we have our great partners at Life Sciences Innovation Hub and at Innovate Calgary. We've got our great partners at Platform Calgary and our innovation ecosystem here as a whole. And so we would say reach out and let us start to have that conversation with you early, and come and be part of our nurture program. Come and learn about the different types of partners that are innovation ecosystem that can actually help you get ready for CDL. Because at the end of the day, you know, CDL, we're at that sort of that last stage towards really getting to commercialization. We're sort of pre-seed, seed stage. Many of the companies, as they come out of the lab itself, you know, will go on to raise capital. And so what we really want to do is catch them early in that funnel, help work with them through that. And sometimes it requires a tough conversation, right? That says, hey, listen, this may not be a massively scalable business, but it doesn't mean it's not a business. Or perhaps this technology is actually better licensed. Don't build a business around it. It's a feature, not a product. And so, you know, we're really working to kind of help educate, inform, and nurture research scientists, entrepreneurs that want to participate and commercialize their technology.
Dr. Aleem Barwani is the Director for Public Policy and Strategic Partnerships at the Cummings School of Medicine and the lead for public policy at the O'Brien Institute for Public Health at UCalgary. Aleem was our guest in episode 9 and talked about working with differing perspectives in order to build better outcomes for everyone involved in a project.
We've talked with previous guests about minimizing risk in order to get collaborators on board, partnerships in innovation. How difficult is it to minimize that risk when it comes to public policy? You have so many different perspectives, social perspectives coming into implementing something in public space. How do you diminish the concerns around risk when that is involved?
The first step is to not see it exclusively as risk. I think in any situation where there is that tension and conflict, there is the opportunity to create something new and higher level that connects those diverse perspectives into a higher order output that actually serves those multiple stakeholders. And I think in order to do that, you first need to recognize who those diverse opinions are and where they rest, and do we have them included? Then we have to respect that those differences exist. So you have to, it's acknowledge that they exist, they have a right to exist, whether or not we agree with those positions. And once you've recognized and respected those diverse positions, then you can move towards admiration. And under that thread of admiration is where we begin to value difference. And so I think by focusing not on the differences, by focusing not on what is the conflict pieces exclusively, by looking at what are the underlying values or perspectives or history or experiences that lead to those different perspectives, and then from that base, bridging towards how do we do things differently together, back to that notion of common purpose that serves all those different parties as well. And I think if you draw on Roger Martin's work on integrative thinking, you know, you look at who are the best performers in business, in nonprofits, in any leadership role, it's people who can take two seemingly opposing ideas and pull them together, let them rest in conflict in our minds, and then be able to then come out to a third higher purpose, a third more value-creating opportunity on the other side.
Dr. Aaron Phillips joined us in episode 7. He is an assistant professor in the Departments of Physiology and Pharmacology at UCalgary, as well as clinical neurosciences at the Hotchkiss Brain Institute and cardiac science at the Libin Institute. Aaron talks about measuring success in his work and offers ideas for cultivating partnerships. What are your measures of success? Is it the fact that you have patients who are so engaged that you have to temper their expectations? Is it that you can sit back at the end of the day and admire the team that has been developed internationally? What are you looking at as success?
I like to see forward progress. Really, that's what I like to think about each day. I like to think of what we're doing as kind of like a series of parallel conveyor belts. And we're trying to get each of them to the end. And at the end, when everything, the products are all done, then something great happens, right? I want to see progress on each of these conveyor belts. Some of that is, the technology moving forward. I like to see that some new hardware is developed and it's moving, it's validated, or it's reached its efficacy test. Sometimes it's, a new patient that we've been able to assess and deem them to be suitable for our upcoming clinical trial. But sometimes it's like a trainee getting a really neat paper and getting really excited. Sometimes it's a patent getting filed. It can be any of those things, really, but I just like to see forward progress constantly towards this kind of final goal, which is to get this therapy indicated for patients.
Dr. Phillips, you've had so much success with partnerships, international partnerships, funding. What led to that success, and what were some of your barriers?
I think it comes from a philosophy, really. If someone in science wants to make a huge impact, it can't be done alone. One lab working on one element, one piece, we've tried that model for a couple generations now, and the process can be slow, and the vast majority of findings never get translated, over 90%, I would say. So you need to work with experts that complement what you have. There's no way around it. It needs to be collaborative, and sometimes, international is very important, I think, too, because you get a lot of different perspectives, as well as, I hate to say, it's your talent pool grows. You're working with these other organizations, and they're bringing in their own people, and, you're finding these amazing team members, and, you lift them up, and they start to contribute. So there's a variety of reasons. Collaboration is like any relationship, I think. It needs to be mutually beneficial, and communication needs to be strong. I've found that most people are extremely open to collaboration. I don't have any negative stories to share. It's all positive. And I will say, as a kudos to University of Calgary, especially what I'm most familiar with, which is down at the Cummings School of Medicine, it's extremely collaborative. That's actually one of the big draws of why I wanted to come here. And during kind of my recruitment process was the number of people with sincere, enthusiastic desire to collaborate and work together. It's been really great. I'm in two institutes. So we have the Hotchkiss Brain Institute and then the Libin Cardiovascular Institute. Mm-hmm. I think I was the first full member of both, or the first hire that was the first full member of both. But it was strategic, you know. The leadership wanted to start connecting the institutes and bringing more and more collaboration together because they could feel this energy that more and more people were wanting to work together. So I felt like a bit of a bridge in that space, and it's worked out really well.
We spoke with Dr. Lawrence Korngut in episode 4. Lawrence is the Director of Innovation and Commercialization at the Hotchkiss Brain Institute and a professor of neurology at the Cummings School of Medicine. Dr. Korngut shared some insight into how he remains motivated in his work.
Lumio has been a great success, and it's been a long journey for you, it sounds like, with many ups and downs, as you indicated. Where did you find the motivation to continue during some of those downs? What advice do you have in those moments of vulnerability?
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting because this is inevitable, right? And so there's always moments that are thrilling, and there are moments that are almost catastrophic. You know, I do think maybe it's my background in the, you know, working in the hospital, but to me, those are the most catastrophic things, and professional shortcomings or failures or whatever, as a result, I think are much less big of a deal. But nonetheless, it's still difficult. But I think you have to be an optimist, right? I would say I've learned not to get too excited, you know, when something amazing's happening, you're like, okay, well, like, let's just relax and try to enjoy it, but knowing that the next failure is just going to follow right after that. But don't let that pull you down too low, right? And so I think at this point I don't feel the highs as much, but I also don't feel the lows, which is, I think that middle ground is really where you want to operate, because that's probably the reality of the situation for the most part, right? I mean, it's easy to give up on these things when you have a bunch of failures in a row, especially. But I think I've failed at so many of these things now that it, you know, it's just sometimes failure gives you a momentum of its own that allows you to sort of get to that next bump, right? So
we've touched on this with prior guests. Mm-hmm. There almost needs to be an acceptance that failure is going to far outweigh any success you do finally, I don't want to say stumble into, but that might be what it feels like when it finally comes, that you've been hit with so many failures. Just trust in the path that you're going and something good will come of it.
Right. You know, I really believe in this concept of serendipity surface area, which is if you spend enough time with people that are passionate about similar things, if you approach things not necessarily with a strategy or an agenda, but just to kind of move things forward, which of course strategies and agendas are helpful for, and you help enough people for their careers or what they're trying to achieve, it all comes back, right? Yeah. And to me, this has been an incredible approach personally, because, you know, I'll often meet with people and I don't need or want or desire anything from them. I'm just curious about what they're doing. And this has led to so many partnerships and mm-hmm. opportunities that are so deeply meaningful and productive, right? And to me, that's the key to all of this is, to me, it's about the people, the relationships, what you build together. And the end result is never something I spend too much time thinking about, because it's too abstract in a way, right? Whereas those people that you're on the journey with is thrilling. Like, I am having the time of my life, but it's because of that. It's not because of, oh, Lumio's has certain revenues or whatever. And I think that culture attracts like-minded people, and then it just keeps building from there.
We had the pleasure of speaking with Derek Hunter in episode 15. You'll see the Hunter family name attached to many entities across the University of Calgary due to their philanthropic commitment to education and entrepreneurship. Derek continues to move his family's efforts forward as an active member of many boards at UCalgary. In our conversation, Derek talked about what makes both the University of Calgary and the City of Calgary a great place for entrepreneurship.
What you have tried to accomplish, Derek, you're coming from the community into the university space. The way you're speaking, you're really talking about trying to nurture that relationship and build a relationship, and that has been ongoing. So how do we continue to build that fabric? You said something about MIT, that baked into the DNA of MIT. How do we start to rewrite what is happening here between UCalgary and the community and make it more of a fabric, make it more of something that is just baked in?
Well, Jordan, I actually think it's here. I mean, there's always room for improvement. You know, there's always this discussion, how do we get a better ranking? And there's lots of rankings out there, but how do we become a top school? You know, when you look around, people always talk about, you know, Queens and U of T and UBC and Western, you know, it's kind of the top schools. And why is that? Well, longevity, right? But what is the thing that we've got in Calgary? What have we got in Calgary that they can't provide in Kingston and London, really anywhere other than Toronto? And I would say it's a very community-focused, large business community that's really willing to help and to interact with students, okay? So when we started the Hunter Center in 2013, one of the things we wanted to do, we're the only business school in the country that requires all of our students to take a course in entrepreneurial thinking, right? And they've put through thousands over the years, and it's a really great course, and it's challenging. And every time I meet a student that's taken it, I say, well, what'd you think? And it's very binary. They tend to either say it is the best course I ever took, or it's the worst. If it's the worst, it's because it's challenging. It's not the sort of thing where you can read a book and take a test and pass. But if it's one of the best, it's really forced you to kind of think outside in a different way, come up with an idea, develop it, research it, probably pivot, present it, defend it. You know, there's a lot of steps that you don't get, and it's very real. And to make it as real as possible, we engage members of the business community. And, you know, when we first kicked that off, we needed to get a bunch of mentors. And we needed something like, you know, I went out to my network and we had over 100 volunteers right out of the gate. Now, you would never be able to do that in London, Ontario or Kingston, Ontario. They don't have the density of business people, and particularly business people that are willing to spend the time, because, you know, these people are volunteering to spend a few hours with the students and give them advice. And there's a lot of value that comes from that because of this sort of real world connection between genuine business people and our students. That's been ongoing for a long time now, and it's well established. And I think it's really important. And it's kind of our secret sauce at the business school, but it's also what we're trying to bring campus wide through the Hunter Hub. I mean, there's always room for improvement and to bring more people in, but my experience at having, you know, I've literally, you know, dragged more than 100 people by the lapel saying you need to do this, right, has been that with few exceptions, they say it's very rewarding to spend that time with the students. And so we just need to continue to build on that.
Is the course in entrepreneurial thinking available to everyone? I feel like that needs to be embedded in all the curriculum across the board.
It is, Brenda. And so actually, we committed to the Hunter Hub back in 2017 when Elizabeth Cannon was president. She was a great advocate for what we wanted to do. She was the originator of the tagline, Canada's Entrepreneurial University, right? What does that mean? Well, I mean, I think that's kind of up to us at the Hunter Hub to define. So it involves the connections with the community and obviously the instruction that's on campus. But, you know, I was really delighted because one of the first things we achieved as a campus was to implement an embedded certificate in entrepreneurial thinking. And so that's live now. And that means that any student in any faculty on campus has a prescribed route which they can undertake. And it's different depending on which faculty you're in, but I think there may be some commonality of courses. But the point is that it doesn't matter what faculty you're in. You can do an embedded certificate in entrepreneurial thinking. That is unique. And that is the sort of thing that nobody else does. And over time, you know, the hope is that people from across Canada and around the world will say, well, you know, I'm interested in entrepreneurship. Where do I go? Well, you know, U of C, its rankings as a entrepreneurial school have really shot up over the last few years as we've implemented a lot of these things. The number of courses available are higher than any other school of our size in the country. And the opportunities for the students both to do an embedded certificate, but also to interact with the business community are unmatched.
Those are just some of the many great ideas and advice that is worth revisiting here on the Now Innovating podcast. I would encourage you to go back and pick through some of the episodes that we featured today, but really download all of the episodes and take them in at your own time and your own leisure. We really do appreciate all of the downloads, all of the attraction that this podcast has brought to innovation and entrepreneurship. Thanks again for listening. We've got a new episode next week.
Now Innovating is produced in partnership with CJSW 90.9 FM from the Office of the Vice President Research at the University of Calgary.